Welcome to the Meaningful Business Podcast with me, Jo Casey, the place for coaches, healers, consultants, and other service-based folks so you can learn how to build a sustainable, meaningful business without having to resort to the dark arts or sleazy marketing techniques. So I'm here with Meredith Noble, who, you're just going to love her. You're going to love this conversation. We've already established that we have an incredibly similar dress style and dress sense. We've already established that we have a big fan thing going on for all things Kath Kidston. But she's got a really, I think, important message that just, I just don't see happening nearly enough. And so I'm really excited to talk to her. And I hope that you're going to be really excited to listen as well. So Meredith, hi.
Hi. It's so nice to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You're so welcome. And so for people who aren't familiar with your work, because I always think it's far better if you get to kind of explain exactly what it is that you do. Would you mind just explaining a little bit about what it is that you do, you know, how you kind of do your thing and what your work is in the world?
Yeah, so I'm a coach and I help plus size people find food and body peace. So mm-hmm. I basically help people who may be struggling with body image issues or inner worth issues or disordered eating, mm-hmm. help them heal their relationships with their body and arrive at a place of peace, basically.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think it's important to stress at this point that you are not a weight loss coach. You are not.
No.
I'm
the antithesis of weight loss coach. Yes, I do all of this from a non-diet perspective using mm-hmm. philosophies of like health at every size and fat activism and fat liberation.
Mm. And I was so... When I looked at your website, it resonated with me just hugely, because I think the concept of what makes an acceptable woman, what makes an acceptable woman's body, what makes an acceptable woman's personality, all of that is just so soaked into that, you know, it's the water that we all are swimming in. And yes. It affects all of us on a myriad of ways that I think a lot of the time we're not even aware of.
Yes. Yes. I think that's such a big thing. Like I have this little drawing I made in one of my ebooks that I made of us all like little fishies swimming in this ocean, and we have no idea we're in the ocean. Mm. And sometimes the most powerful thing can just be kind of taking that step back and saying, oh my gosh, like this culture is everything about this culture is designed to make me feel
wrong.
Not as good about myself.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah.
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 And I know for me as a cis woman, this has been something that I can remember being part of my life since I was 4, maybe, that this concept of, you know, there's something wrong with my body. I now have a daughter who is mm-hmm. now 8, and at age 4 she came home from school one day. She was just in the kind of the kindergarten nursery, and told me that a boy had called her fat.
Oh my gosh.
And I was the kind of I can't even describe that visceral feeling of, oh my god, what are we doing to ourselves? What are we doing?
Yeah.
And how do I inoculate as best I can my daughter? And then of course you then have to look at, well, what's my relationship with body and what's my relationship with food? Oh god, it takes up so much of our headspace and our cultural space. So I'm really pleased that we can have this conversation, because I think it is one of the most vital conversations that we as a culture need to be having.
Yeah, it's vital for us as individuals. And as you say, it's vital for us passing things on to the next generation.
Yeah.
And I love the word you use, inoculate her. And like, you know, obviously she's going to be in diet culture, but there's a lot of things you can do too to, mm-hmm. you know, get those ideas in early and help her realize that, you know, other people may believe that, but she doesn't have to believe that about herself.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay. So I want to start off by just asking you a little bit about your kind of business journey, how mm-hmm. how you got into this work, because, you know, there's a 1,001 different life coaches out there, but I don't know many people who are doing, I don't think, well, I could know maybe a couple that are doing work in your type of field. So what drew you to this type of work? How did you get here?
It was entirely personal journey. Like, if you'd asked me even like 4 years ago, like if I thought I would be doing other than working in technology, I would have been like, no. So what happened was that I had struggled with this, with weight and like attempting to lose weight and failing at mm-hmm. losing weight, and feeling horrible about my body basically since puberty, you know, like age 13, yeah. I started, was when I developed a larger body and started feeling really inferior to other people. And I struggled and struggled and was told to go on various diets and things, and it kind of destroyed me inside, right? I was just kind of a shell at a certain point where it was just like, I don't know what to do now. Like, I know I'm supposed to be aiming for this goal, but it just feels impossible to get there. And I was kind of in the throw up my hands phase, and I was just like, screw this. Like, I don't know what else to do. I'm just gonna like eat. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I discovered this movement called Health at Every Size. And the basic core tenets were like, you're okay as you are, and you don't need to change weight to live a happy, healthy life. And the moment I heard the message, like, it kind of snapped me out. Like, we were talking about kind of being so into mm-hmm. diet culture that we can't see the forest for the trees or the water for, like,
whatever. Yeah, we're missing all metaphors and it's fabulous. Yeah.
I was so in it, and like that just that message is that, like, you don't need to diet, you don't need to change the size of your body, you can be happy just as you are. As soon as I heard that, I was like, oh my God, that's it. I was so ready for it at that point, because I myself had hit what some people in my field call like diet rock bottom, mm-hmm. where I was like, this isn't working, but I don't know what else to yeah. reach for. And it just it happened to be introduced to me, and I found it, and I was like, this is it. And I started my own personal healing journey, which was amazing. And I worked with some really wonderful people along the way. And then a few months into that, I hit burnout at my regular job. I was in tech before, and I just started to feel like, you know what? Like, I don't want to be doing what I'm doing anymore. And this work is so incredibly important and meaningful to me. Like, I want everyone else to know these same ideas, and to know that they can opt out of this system that we've all been indoctrinated into. So it was pure passion, of me just wanting other people to know this. And started, I could find my own joy in sharing it with other people. And so then I created Made on Generous Plan, and started doing the trainings that I felt I needed to, you know, be able to work with people and be able to support them properly. And finished that, and have been doing this work ever since.
You've almost kind of anticipated my next question, which is about, you know, well, what does the term meaningful business mean to you? Yeah. But you more or less just said it, you know, that whole thing about you get to change the culture, and you get to almost, I've almost like got this image again. I think maybe it's water and fishes that we were talking about. Almost like you're throwing out these, you know, these lifesavers to people.
Oh my
who
God.
Are,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a great image. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to see myself as like a savior in any way, but when I work with people, it's like a partnership, and it's like, I can be your guide. I've been here, and I'm going to help you kind of like step out of this culture and build the adequate support systems so that, you know, when you leave, you're not like, oh my God, what now? Yeah.
Uh-huh. So when you first kind of reached out to me, cause you sent me this amazing email, and you said, I really want to talk about this subject because I think it's really pertinent to people in business, particularly women in business. And you shared a story about another very public entrepreneur that she's shared publicly. Would you mind just sharing that and why you think this is kind of, you know, not particularly important, but it's, you know, but why this is relevant to entrepreneurs and business owners as well?
Yeah, it was a heartbreaking day. It was someone that I you know, have admired her work for a while and think she's doing great work in the world. I don't know whether to mention her name or not. I mean, she wasn't shy about, I'll just say it was Amy Porterfield, mm-hmm. because she shared it herself on her podcast. She was mm-hmm. very open. She did a whole podcast on basically how she holds herself back because of her weight. And I was just kind of floored because when I have seen her work, she just seems really confident. But she was saying that she rarely does video appearances because she's so ashamed of her body. And when I look at Amy, like I do not consider Amy even, you know, even plus size. She's someone who is what I would consider like a straight size woman who is feeling really insecure about her body. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear that even though I specialize in helping people on the plus size side of the spectrum, like pretty much everything I talk about is valid for everyone.
Yeah.
But I was just so heartbroken. I saw this like really successful yeah. entrepreneur and I thought, wow, like how much more successful could she have been if this portion of her brain that is dedicated to her not feeling good about herself was freed up to actually, you know, put into her passions and her pursuits. Mm-hmm. And I emailed and just said, like, there's another way to do this. And, you know, I got a form letter back. But it really struck me. And then pretty much the next day, I saw someone who was in sort of my circles in terms of people I've been training with and things. Mm-hmm. And she said a very similar thing about like having like a lot of insecurities that morning and how it affected her and her business. And I thought like, wow, this is happening from people who have like multi-million dollar businesses all the way down to people who are just starting out and just building. And it just breaks my heart because it takes a lot of our brain space away from us. We spend so much time focusing on it, and we're really holding ourselves back when we do that.
Yeah, a friend of mine, a fellow coach, wrote a newsletter not so long ago about how she could never watch the film The Matrix for years and years and years, because every time she watched it, all she could think was, oh, I don't look like Carrie-Anne Moss.
Oh my God.
She was saying this in one of those kinds of, yeah, that what are we like, the crazy things that we do to ourselves. Yeah. But when I read that, I thought, oh God, I don't even want to think about the number of opportunities I've turned down, or parties I didn't go to, or events I didn't show up for, or people I didn't talk to, or even movies I didn't watch, because that sense of there's something wrong with me because I don't look the way I am meant to look.
Yeah, exactly. And pretty much, like, I don't have the statistics close at hand, but like, just within people who identify as female, like the proportion of us who have these thoughts is mm-hmm. just astounding, and it's holding all of us back. And, you know, it's affecting people of all genders, obviously, and, mm-hmm. and men are struggling too, and fat men in particular are really struggling. And it's holding back a massive proportion of our population. And the message I want people to understand is, like, there's a system at work here that's making us feel this way about mm-hmm. ourselves. And it's diet companies trying to make money off us. It's people trying to make us feel bad about ourselves because it benefits them in some way, whether it's explicit or implicit. And I want people to know that, like, that system only exists as long as we buy into it. And if we start to opt out and say, like, no, I don't need to diet, I don't need to spend time worrying about the size, shape, mm-hmm. color, you know, gender of my body, any of these things, the more we opt out, the more the system actually crumbles, and we have power over that system. So that's my main message, is that we're allowed to opt out, and opting out can be really healing, and opting out can actually start to dismantle the system.
That's kind of, when you're describing that, the system will start to crumble. I was starting to think, yes, which is kind of like a rebellious act. It's revolutionary to say, you know.
It's liberating.
Diet. Yeah, it's is. Great. It really is.
Yeah.
So, what do you see as... So you described your experience. There was something about you being at the right point when you heard that message about health at every size. Have you been able to identify what are some of the maybe the the earliest stages. So maybe, you know, the where we have some wiggle room with our identity and our subconscious around this, because do we all have to get to that point of I'm totally done. I cannot have one more Slim Fast shake, or I cannot buy one more box of Special K. Do you have the Special K ad every January and every kind of summer? Oh, it's like, God, just replace two meals with tasteless cardboard cereal.
I know. It's so bad. That is such a great question, though. I really appreciate that question, because I think for a lot of us, it does take, like, there's so much hope. Like, when we make a new plan to go on a new diet, it brings up so much hope in us, right? It's like, okay, everything is going to be different now. I'm going to be different. People are going to love me. I'm going to be accepted. I'm going to feel confident, right? And there's like, that is a really strong positive emotion. And it's hard sometimes to give up that hope when we're faced with these ideas that maybe diets don't actually work, right? And that's something that Health at Every Size scholars have discovered. Like, when you actually look at the diet literature, like, none of these plans actually work. And the vast majority of people who go on diets end up exactly the same size they were when they started, or larger. And that's a powerful fact, but when we're still bought into the hope of, like, and the dream of what we might achieve when we become that ideal body, those are, like, kind of competing forces, right? There's, like, the these facts that are, like, kind of, like, knock us back and think, like, oh, crap, like, that's a really scary idea. And then there's this hope, and there's tension between them, right? And what I find, and what a lot of others have found, is that when you have tried and failed so many times, the hope diminishes, and then the facts can kind of start to come to the light, right? It's like, okay, well, I've learned, like, through repeated trials that actually this isn't working for me, and actually it's just making me miserable. That doesn't mean that, like, we have to, you know, do diets endlessly and endlessly until we reach that point. I do think there's ways, you know, just immersing yourself in these ideas. Like, there are people who, I did a handful of diets through the years. It wasn't like I have been on, like, 100 diets or anything. So I don't know. I think that there's something that has to connect internally of, like, wait, this isn't working for me. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean, like, dieting until you're, like, just slumped on the floor, like, you know, just completely depleted. But there has to be, like, that, like, wait, this isn't working for me, and, like, us being able to kind of take that perspective of, like, wait, what are the harms that that have been done to me as a result of this culture? And when we can start to examine those harms, then those can kind of start to outweigh, like, the power of this dream ideal figure that we think we want to have. Does that make sense?
It does. That's so interesting. I'd never thought of it that way. But so this kind of past couple of years, really, I just decided that I wasn't going to do it to myself anymore, particularly because as a mother of a daughter who's obviously also already quite weight conscious, I thought, I don't want to be putting any of that onto her. And I have been the queen of the extreme diet plans in the past. So, yeah, I've done paleo, I've done raw, I've done Weight Watchers a bazillion times, you know, all of those. And then when my daughter was a few years younger, I decided I'm not going to do it. And then went through this weird phase of, but what do I do instead? So then, you know, you try the intuitive eating and all of that stuff. And I'd never thought about that kind of, it's that hope. That's like the drug that you get. That's the kick of, you know, kind of January when you see all the diet books in the supermarket and things. Even now, even though it's been a few years that I've been kind of, I'm not going to do it. I'm done with all of that. That feeling of, oh, but I could. I could have arms like Michelle Obama. I could, you know. And it is. It's that hope. That's the enticing thing about it, that almost kind of makes you forget the kind of, yeah, but, you know, I like cake, or, you know, it's not healthy to deprive a whole food group, or, you know, what am I saying to my daughter about, you know, balanced eating and pleasure and what we deserve, and, you know, all of that stuff. It is that hope is so enticing.
Yeah. I think we often build it up as this mythical thing too, and we put a lot more into that story than is actually there. Yeah. And there are, I want to be clear, like, there are privileges to being thin, and there's no doubt in our society that there are benefits. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things we kind of artificially hold ourselves back from. And so, like, one of the things I do with my clients is, like, let's question, like, what are the things you're holding back from doing until you're thin? Yeah. And do you actually, like, are those just artificial limitations you've mm-hmm. placed on yourself? Because often we make it into a lot more than it actually is. And it's just like kind of this shining beacon on a hill of, like, I want to reach it and all these magical things are going to happen. But yeah, it's not as magical as it actually seems in reality. And I think a lot of people want, sometimes, like, our dieting temporarily may get us to the place where we want to be. And usually our body image issues are still there. And usually, you know, all these other feelings of insecurity are still there waiting for us. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily the magic that it holds for us isn't really true when we've sometimes reached that goal.
Yeah. No, I can see that. Yeah. I've got a client who's such a smart, amazing, brilliant, brilliant woman, and she said to me recently she's been working with I presume somebody in a similar field to you. Kind of, you know, she's given up dieting, and she said, my coach said to me, name one person in your life who's ever been on a diet and has kept the weight off. She was like, and I couldn't think of one.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of one. And I thought, I don't think I have. And then I thought of one person, and I thought, but I've not seen her in 4 or 5 years. I should check up on her.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. But no, I don't know anyone who has.
Yeah.
I know some women who are very, very controlled in what they will allow themselves to eat. So they're almost like on a permanent restrictive diet, and, you know, go to the gym like 4 or 5 times a week and things. But
that's it, right? Yeah. The people who, like, there's this stat thrown around a lot, like 95 to 98% of diets fail. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an old number, and I don't like to use it that much. But even if, like, if we just say, like, there's this vast proportion of diets that don't work, and there's some that maybe, quote unquote, do. If you look at the people for whom those diets are, quote unquote, working, those people are exhibiting disordered eating behaviors and often disordered exercising behaviors in order to maintain their bodies at a certain size. And are often experiencing extreme mental harm through that process, and it's easy for those of us on the outside who want that body to just, it all looks like sunshine and roses, but often they're really hurting themselves in that process. So, and the trick is, like, when we feel like we see this proof of diets working, because you can lose weight often temporarily, mm-hmm. but it's the fact that, and that, like, that reinforces, like, oh, diets work, but actually it's years later, you know, like within 1 to 5 years, most people put back on the weight, and we don't always remember that part. So it's, it's a mm-hmm. really great exercise to kind of be like, wait, can I actually see this work for someone? And what was their mental state if it did work?
It was one of those things that, it kind of, it was something I kind of sort of knew on one level, but when she asked that question, I thought, yeah, I don't think I do. No, any. So why are we all doing this thing?
Right. Yes. Again, that's the wake up moment, right? Yeah. And, like, when we're in it, it's like we don't see it, but it's the taking the step back and be mm-hmm. like, wait, this doesn't actually work. I have no evidence that it works. And, like, what am I feeling as a result of all my attempts, my failed attempts?
Uh-huh. I can, again, remember quite acutely the moment that I thought, I'm not doing this to myself anymore, was when I was obviously far enough along my healing journey that I liked myself, and I couldn't summon the self-hatred that I had always used as my fuel to kickstart the diet.
Wow.
It was like, it wasn't there anymore, and it was like, I don't know how to do this any other way.
Wow.
Maybe I don't want to do this then. It was such a because I think for I certainly don't think I'm alone, that was the, you know, it's that self-hatred, it's that feeling of there's something wrong or unacceptable in me that I have to fix, that yeah. means I have to deprive myself of food
yeah.
and sustenance.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really curious about this health at any size philosophy, because we're told so much that to be healthy, you have to be thin. I mean, to be overweight, you know, I live in the UK, so we, you know, we have kind of health ads that are uh-huh. around about how, you know, being overweight will lead to diabetes and will lead to, you know, high blood pressure and, you know, any number of ills. And so I'm curious about the concept of health at any size. So how true is it, is that message? Is it a balancing yeah. act? Is it about, you know, do you offset the self-esteem impact or, you know, the mental health impact with that? I will stop anticipating. I will just let you speak.
No worries. So it's called Health at Every Size, and sometimes it's also referred to as HAES, like HAES. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the key things is that our society is very focused on health, like health above all other things. And so I want to preface even any discussion of health at every size of, like, we are told by public health authorities and other people in our society that we have so much control over our health. And it's led to this culture that is obsessed with health at all costs. And a lot of times we prioritize our physical health in particular. Like, we don't necessarily think about our social health or our mental health or our occupational health, things like that. So that is a huge myth right there, that we have so much control over our health. There's a lot, like a massive proportion of our health is related to our genetics and our trauma history and how we grew up and all these things. So I just want to preface with all that, because when we get into talk of health at every size, sometimes people can be like, but you don't have to be healthy. And one of the key things of health at every size is that you don't, like, it's not imposing, health is not a moral imperative. When we start talking about health, it becomes this thing that can actually become like ableist or like, this is not just, health at every size is not about saying everyone should be healthy or that everyone can be healthy. So it's just really important to talk about that first. But
thank you for saying that, because that is really important. And you're right. We do have a culture. I mean, in the UK, we have a public health service. We have the National Health Service. And very often, if you're not being responsible about your health, you are putting a burden on that health service, that very precious resource. You know, it's literally put, yeah. you know, like that. And, yeah. you know, why should we be responsible for your unhealthy habits? Yeah. And it always fascinates me that kind of, you know, but having a high stress job where you're working 60 hours a week, that is somehow morally better than,
right.
you know, yeah. So thank you for pointing that out as well.
Yeah. We live in this world where like personal responsibility is like the supreme thing. And then what happens is there's this myth that we have control over our weight. Like, that is one of the biggest myths in our culture. And that mm-hmm. is one of the things that Health at Every Size is trying to shine a light on, that we don't actually have control over what we weigh. And when you start to realize that and look at the science behind it, and that, again, it's that idea that like when we diet, we just go back to where we were or even higher. Mm-hmm. So Health at Every Size says we don't have control over what we weigh. And it also says that fat people are not inherently unhealthy. There's been a lot, because there's this myth in our culture of fat being bad, which is like a cultural thing, and we've been striving for this thin ideal. Mm-hmm. It influences the science that's done too. And so if you actually look at a lot of weight science research, it's heavily biased. There are people coming in with assumptions that fat people are less than in many ways, like less healthy, et cetera. And so when they're doing these studies, They're doing studies where it's correlative data. They can say, well, these fat people are more likely to have this thing, but they're not looking, they're just blaming it on the fat. And what they're not looking at is, are there any other variables that are happening to these fat people that are influencing their health? And they're not looking at impacts of like weight stigma. Mm. And the fact that like there's a lot of fat people who are afraid to go to the doctor because of how poorly they're treated there, right? Mm-hmm. Or there's healthcare they're not receiving. Like I've heard like certain little areas in the NHS, for instance, won't do certain surgeries unless mm-hmm. you're below a certain weight or you lose a certain amount of weight. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like our weight science is not looking at these kinds of impacts, like mm-hmm. the psychological impacts of being in a larger body, or all of these what you would consider like confounding factors in research. And so the truth is we can't look at a lot of our weight research and be like, oh, fat people are unhealthy, because they haven't looked at actually all the factors that are going into things. Yeah. There's even something called the obesity paradox. Have you ever heard of that before?
No, I've not. Tell me about that.
Researchers started doing studies on longevity, and they actually found that people who are in, I forget exactly what the BMI rate is, or the number is, but like people who are quote unquote overweight or obese actually live longer than people.
Sorry, that's awful. I should say that. One for the team.
Well, the important thing to note is that they called it the obesity paradox, because they're like, but wait,
they're already saying something is wrong with this picture.
I don't understand how this can be that the fat people are living longer in these studies. And that there is exposing bias there, right? They're not, they're like, it's like, but this doesn't fit. Instead of being like, oh, wow, maybe, you know, the research that has led us to believe that they don't live as long is biased in some way. So Health at Every Size looks at all the weight science literature and dispels a lot of myths around, like, the things that we consider common wisdom and that have been taught to us about, you know, our obesity epidemic and things like that.
Oh, my goodness. I can feel my horizons expanding already. Okay, so can we talk about the culture then, about this? Because one of the things that I am fascinated by, and one of kind of the whys behind my work, is that I want to expand the possibilities and almost like allow women to take up more space. Now, a lot of what I talk about is about, you know, the virtual space, the kind of conversational space, the, you know, the thought landscape. But there is also something about the physical space. I think these two things are connected. Women are told to not be too opinionated, not be too loud, to defer to other people, to be caring, not to be strident, you know, all of those things. Mm-hmm. And we're also told to be thin.
Yeah.
And small. Mm-hmm. And that we're weak, and that, you know, we need to let men feel that they are strong. And so I'm fascinated about that kind of culture and how you see that playing out in terms of body size and what that kind of culture that we're living in does to us.
Yeah. I wish I had the quotes close at hand, but Naomi Wolf and her book Beauty Myth, she has mm-hmm. some like really powerful quotes about like dieting being the most potent political sedative in history.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There's another one too that I'm blanking on at the moment, but it is absolutely true. I think all of these things, and so there's a capitalistic system and there's a patriarchal system, which mm-hmm. are all intertwined, mm-hmm. right? And I believe they're absolutely, like, I don't believe anyone is out there scheming, saying, like, you know, we got to get those women down. But it's this self-reinforcing system that's been created, mm-hmm. and women to fit into that system are taught that they have to be small in all ways. Mm-hmm. And again, it's cluing into this system and questioning, like, who is benefiting from me feeling like I need to be small in all mm-hmm. ways. And I think a really important question to ask ourselves is, like, why why do they get to be happy? why are the people who are benefiting, why is their success and happiness more important than my success and happiness? Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when we can frame it like that, it's like, wait, like, there's a power dynamic here, and when I buy into that power dynamic, I'm losing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right that it's both, it's the way we act and behave as well as the size of our bodies. And sometimes those things even overlap, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I've spent plenty, a transit trip like this, basically.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like, those people on either side of me, it's more important for them to be comfortable. And meanwhile, like, my back is going to be aching at the end of this journey. And that's just a price I have to pay because I'm fat and it's my fault. And
And I'm wrong, and I will just try and make myself as invisible and, you know, less invasive as I can possibly be. How do you see this relate then, if we kind of bring it almost full circle to where we came in about the kind of women in business and, I don't want to say women in business. I want to say kind of people in business and how this impact on our ability to build businesses and have change and have meaningful businesses. How do you see that kind of play in?
Yeah, I guess I see it as like exactly what you said at the very beginning, like what opportunities have I passed up or like explicitly or implicitly by holding myself back? And also I feel like, I don't know, I feel really passionately about my work is not just, you know, in the room or the video conference where I'm talking with a client and like helping them heal their relationship to their body. Like my work is also in healing the culture more broadly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's sort of an ethical responsibility I have. And that plays into my concept of a meaningful business, that I can help, especially because I help people who identify as plus size or fat. And I didn't make it clear that I use fat as a completely neutral descriptor, but I do. Like, the world is a crappy place for fat people to live. Like fat people are hated and shunned and mistreated in many ways. And I can help the people I'm working with build resiliency against the oppression and discrimination they're feeling. But unless I'm actually doing something to push back on the discrimination and oppression myself, the world is not actually going to get better for them. Like, no matter how much I help them develop themselves, they're still having to like push against this crappy world. So, I'm like asking myself, am I answering your question? I think one component of a meaningful business can be like looking more broadly about how am I changing the culture that I'm living in. And sometimes that happens on multiple planes, I guess. And I guess that's kind of the point I'm trying to make. I feel like if we believe in having a meaningful business, and that business is doing good work out in the world, it's sad if we're holding ourselves back from the meaningful work we want to do, basically. Yeah. You know, like if we're maybe only able to give like, I don't even know that I want to put numbers on it, but like say like 10% of our brain is occupied, like preoccupied with weight and body and food. Like that's holding back the impact we can make on the world with our meaningful businesses.
Yeah. No, I totally. And for me, one of the things, you know, about my meaningful business is I'm a coach and I'm a podcaster and, you know, I have coaching programs, but we can impact those individuals, like you say, but we also want to be able to, I think, to be able to nudge the culture just that little bit. And part of that is about, yes, empowering individuals, but there's also something about changing the conversation. Sometimes challenging the norms that we have, and sometimes I think even just the fact of having, oh my goodness, I was about to say fat and I had that kind of because I'm so nice, but having
I know, yeah.
fat women fat men to having people of different sizes. You can see I'm shrinking back and away from that word. Oh my goodness, it's so...
It's powerful, I know.
Having them visible and out there. I remember having headshots done, kind of professional ones, and going through all the different outfits that I, you know, and going through the thing of, oh, I don't want to show my arms because you know, I've got, you know. And in the end, I wore a Kath Kisdon sleeveless dress because I thought, well, no, actually, because I want people to see that, you know, this is what a 46-year-old, you know, overweight woman looks like. And I think we should be able to do that. Now, I felt very self-conscious doing that. I can't even think of the proper word. You know, I'm not, what I would say is you know, obese. I am overweight. But I think it's important that we have a variety of body sizes and faces and colours and ages out there being thought leaders, changing conversations, doing their work, saying, hey, what about this? I've got a great idea.
Yeah.
Because it's only by having that true diversity and true representation then we start to break through this idea that the only good way of being is to be a very thin, petite, perfectly groomed white woman.
Yeah.
And there's nothing against slim, petite, perfectly groomed white women, but you know, we have a lot of them in the online space, and I don't want to see less of them. I want to see more of everyone else as well.
Yeah, I think you're so bang on. I think like what you did in like choosing to bare your arms and be there as a 46-year-old woman, that someone was able to look at you and be like, oh, wow, she's like me, right? And it normalizes other mm-hmm. kinds of bodies.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important. Like when we only see like this tiny slice of human diversity in our media, it reinforces that that is the norm
yeah.
and that that is what we mm-hmm. should be aiming for. And the more we're able to put images out there of people of all sizes, colors, genders, et cetera, mm-hmm. it normalizes that like, yeah, that is okay, right? Mm-hmm. Like one of the most powerful things I have people do is change their media, right? Like how can you curate your social media feed mm-hmm. to have more diverse bodies in it? And in mm-hmm. fact, at this point, like my Instagram feed is literally only fat bodies. And there's power in that, right? Like suddenly you're like, oh, wow, this is normal and beautiful. You can start to see the true beauty in people mm-hmm. when you're not comparing everyone in your head to this tiny little norm. And I think that's something really powerful. Like everyone with a business has some, you know, outward face to that business. Mm-hmm. What are you presenting? What norms are you reinforcing with that business, mm-hmm. with the images? Like mm-hmm. I myself, like I don't put anything out from my business unless it features a photo of a fat body. And I try to make those bodies as diverse as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find those bodies.
I was going to say, have you, because...
really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and in particular, I was just on my Instagram feed the other day. Like, it's hard to find photos of fat, older people mm-hmm. because younger people dominate online so much. And it's hard to find images of fat, older people or fat people of color. Mm-hmm. But I have found certain sources. And actually, like, one of the things I ended up doing kind of because I enjoyed the creativity, but also out of necessity, was I draw a lot of my own art because I just couldn't find it. I just couldn't find things that represented what I wanted mm-hmm. to represent out there. And I'm not saying every business owner can or should do that, but I think having that extra check of like, what am I putting out there and what am I reinforcing with that?
Yeah, I think that kind of visual representation is so powerful and so important, and it's very easy to fall into again the norms of, you know, beautiful flat lays of a really clean tidy desk, which mine is never. I'm looking at it
oh
now.
My God.
I have dog treats, I have my water, I have three things of nail varnish, I have a chewed plastic thing, I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah. flat lays do not happen on my desk either because there's literally nowhere to lay.
Or you know, images that are very curated to portray a certain level of affluence or you know, a particular like thinness or whiteness or do you know what that does? I think even without us even realizing is it reinforces the norm, the norms of patriarchy and white supremacy and, you know, thinness and all of those things. And it's only when we become that bit more consciously aware that we can start to change that. So, I mean, that's why I think having these conversations are so important. I remember having Amy Walsh does some fantastic things about, you know, the visual Love imagery her. And things. Yeah. Yes. I remember having a conversation with her once. She said, it was when I was going to get my my headshots done. She said, have a look at the way men and women are photographed and the difference in the portraiture. And she said, you will notice that men tend to look straight on at the camera. It's a powerful pose. Women, quite often, it's over the shoulder. It's coquettish. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of that.
Showing the thinnest part of their body. Yeah.
And as soon as I saw it, it was like I couldn't unsee it. But I hadn't noticed it before.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we need to, remove the scale on these things.
Yeah. Just awareness itself is so powerful. And if you can start to like look with that critical eye, like, wait, why am I doing this? Like, what has told me to do that? And do I buy into that?
And so is there because I think a lot of people will then go, but if I don't do the how it's meant to be, if I don't have the beautiful flat lay, if I don't, you know, have the pictures of me after I've gone on the, you know, the 6-week 800 calorie a day diets before I get my headshots, people still want to hire me or buy my thing? Will I look professional? Will I look like the person I'm wanting to portray?
Yeah.
Can I ask what your experience of that has been? Because you're somebody who very deliberately has set out to be, no, I am not that, I am this. And the kind of the alternative is almost like the nucleus of your business.
Mm-hmm.
So what's been your experience of that? Because you've almost turned that into a strength.
Is there, I was like, I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm in a larger body. And I know it's a gamble because I honestly know there are a lot of people who work with coaches like what I do, and they choose to go with the people who are smaller because there's some part of them that is still, like, they see those bodies as aspirational. And they're secretly hoping that when they start eating intuitively and, like, start, you know, listening to their bodies, that maybe if I work with that person, I don't know, it's so subtle. Like, I don't think they explicitly think this, but again, I think there's like, maybe I'll end up looking like her at the end. I may not be like the size 00, but maybe if I could just be like her at the end.
Yeah.
So I know I'm positive I miss out on clients because of that. But I also feel like there is a certain set of clients that comes to me because I'm in a larger body. And I've heard this over and over again. Like there is something so reassuring and comforting about the fact that I have shared experiences with them. Mm-hmm. And that's what draws them to me. And I think that's true. Like, again, this is what when I wrote to Amy, I was like, there is a proportion of your audience who is so refreshed and excited when you show your medium sized body that looks somewhat like theirs on video. Right. And I think we tend to forget about those people, that it can be so powerful to see yourself represented. And, I don't think, for me, I purposely tried to make it a niche because I was like, I believe there's a certain proportion for people for whom this is a positive, and I'm just going to focus on them, and I'm not going to focus on all the other people who may pass me over because of it. So I think just for as many people who may, I don't know, I think there's a lot fewer people out there that will be judging the arm than we actually think, for instance. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a ton of people who would be like, hell yeah, like, that's awesome. And in business, I think there's so many people who could be our clients that it's okay to sacrifice some people. That's sort of how I see it.
Yeah.
I'm really curious what you think about that.
I agree. The point that I've come to... So is it, there's a couple of things in there for me. First of all, I know I can't be any other way. So you know, I had hang-ups about my body, and I'm still human. I'm still a woman operating in this world. Yeah. I still do. But also about the fact that I'm not very disorganized. I'm not very kind of peppy and life coachy. And I know loads of beautiful, amazing life coaches who also aren't peppy. But that was the idea that I had, that I had to be. And I tried that for a number of years, and my business was exhausting and didn't make me an awful lot of money at all. Once I got to that point of going, I can't try and be that anymore, and was way more honest, that's when my people found me.
Yes, yes.
And now people kind of go, oh, I think you're amazing, you know, and just, right. I love listening to, and because they're my people. I totally know that there are, you know, many people out there who I'm not their thing, but exactly. One of the things I think technology, don't get me wrong, technology is, has some very major drawbacks that we need to, as a society, deal with, but it also has some amazing possibilities for us being able to find those people who are, oh, she's my people. Yes, that's who I needed to see. I needed to be able to see and look and see there's someone who looks like me and might actually understand me, because when I look at, I don't know, Tony Robbins or somebody, I think, I don't believe you've ever had a problem in your life, or not, certainly not a problem that you could relate to about me, or one of those people who seem to have it all together and, you know, doing their yoga on their beach deck and things like that. It's like, it's so far away from my life and the inside of my head that I can't see how you could relate to me. And so I think that the more we can present our whole selves to people, the more likely we are to attract those people who need to see that. I really believe that. But yeah, that's very vulnerable as well, because
it is very vulnerable.
Yeah. Once we break out of the norm, you are going to have people who are going to say, hey, get back in the box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those aren't your people. And as you said, like, it's exhausting to chase after those people, right?
It really is.
And if your point is so good, like, it's a personality thing and letting ourselves be, like, true to ourselves, but it's a body thing too. Yeah. And like, if we're trying to, like, again, squeeze ourselves in, mm-hmm. we're missing out on our true people, right? Because when we're trying to fit into that, chances are the people who are really our people are passing us by.
Yes.
And we're like, oh, I'm not resonating with that, right?
So totally. And we have this kind of, it always makes me laugh, this kind of faux authenticity that people have, oh, I'd be so authentic right now. And it's like, are you though?
yeah, it's scary, right? It's so scary. And then, like, I almost feel like I felt like I had no choice but to just go in, like, being like, this is my body and this is what it is. And because like I feel I can't hide it, right? That said, I do try to limit, like, to not make myself be the face of my business as much. And I feel like there's a lot of, like, brands that are built on, like, people and, like, their full body images. And I really try to stay away from that, because I am conscious that, like we've been talking a lot about, like, people seeing us and seeing themselves in us, and that is true, and there are, like, there's that kind of connection, but I'm aware of, like, the privileges I have, and that, like, I want to serve people beyond just people who identify as, like, small fat white women, right? And so there's that part of it too. I think it's like there's, like, me being myself will attract certain people, but also trying to put other imagery forth and doing my work so that I can work well with people who are different colors and different genders and, you know, any number of, you know, people with disabilities, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be able to see themselves in their work, in my work too, not just, you know, this, you know, what small, I identify as small fat, a small fat white woman.
Right.
So there's that,
okay.
There's that side of it too that I think would be helpful to think about as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. And I also think there's something in the... I almost wonder if the kind of the walls of patriarchy or the... They kind of... You have to start almost from the inside out. So it's those of us... It's far easier for those of us... You know, I identify as a white cis woman. I have, you know, immense privilege that comes with that. Of course, it's a lot easier for me to be able to show up online and to kind of be here I am, take me or leave me, than it is for somebody who has less privilege, because there is a certain safety that comes with, you know, I have a certain amount of economic safety, I have a certain amount of, you know, safety that comes with, you know, my white privilege and all of that stuff. And so I almost wonder if you know, those of us with more privilege, we have to kind of push the walls down that little bit, so that our brothers and our sisters, and you know, who don't have quite so much privilege, can also get to do that. So maybe even seeing somebody who is just a little bit outside the norm of what is, you know, or what has been the accepted face of successful or business person or whatever that might be, even by doing that, even if we just nudge it a little bit, then that still opens up that little space. So maybe it can be nudged a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more.
Exactly. Yeah. And we can use our privilege to open those doors for other people too. And I think that's
so.
Yeah. I think for me, that's part of being like having a meaningful business too, is like, you know, what doors can I open for other people with this work that I'm doing, knowing that, you know, I have certain privileges that are allowing me to do this work. So yeah, it's a constant like question in my head, like, how can I do this? And it's a balance, right? Because like I always think about like, how can I make this more economically accessible to people? But at the same time, I have to make a living, and it's that tension and
this whole thing. Okay, so one last question before we wrap it up. If I could give you a magic wand and you could do anything with that magic wand, what would you change about the world?
This one was hard when you said it to me beforehand. Because I mean, oh god, yeah. This is like the
draft. Isn't it like the three wishes? And I would like wish for three more wishes.
I'm just gonna, there are so many things I could ask for. There are so many forms of oppression happening in the world, but the one I've chosen to focus on is fat phobia. And so I would choose to eradicate this concept of an ideal, to eradicate fear of fatness in our society, which has so many intersections with, again, race, class, etc., gender. So I would choose to focus on that, because I just see so much harm being done, and it hurts. Again, I've chosen to focus on people kind of at the plus side end of the spectrum, but this idea of fat phobia affects everyone. Like, people who are fat are upset about being fat, and people who are not fat are terrified of being fat, and it impacts all of us. So I just want to free up all the brain space of all the people who are worrying about what their body looks like, and help them find like true connection with their body and form like a really positive, supportive, intuitive relationship with their body, and recognize that their body is their home and they don't have to feel hatred towards it. And then see what happens when all that, you know, millions and billions and trillions of hours of thinking time is freed up to do, you know, to heal all the other ills in the world.
Imagine, it's like that Dr. Seuss book, like, the places you would go, the things we could do with all of that collective headspace back.
Yeah, it's dreaming big, yeah.
I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast, but more than that, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing in the world, because I think it's amazing and I think it's so needed, and it warms my heart that there are people like you out there doing this work, so thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been such an honor to chat with you. It was a really wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to the Meaningful Business Podcast with me, Jo Casey. If you want to know more about how you can grow your meaningful business, then head over to meaningfulbizacademy.com. That's meaningfulbizacademy.com. Here you'll find all of the details of the academy, including masterclasses, courses, co-working opportunities, member discounts, how you can get free coaching, exclusive meditations to help build your confidence and bust through those mindset blocks, and a whole lot more. That's meaningfulbizacademy.com, and I'll speak to you soon.